This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Yes, indeed. And this half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, great, great product line of Ford, especially that Explorer. Kia, Hyundai, they have the best in new inventory and a great sales staff that works with you. And a great business staff that works with you. Fabulous pre-owned inventory, all with the Sunbury Motors guarantee, which is so important to go over every vehicle. And the lot is filled with great pre-owned inventory. Terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way. Routine, what you need. Difficult, which you don't want to need, but sometimes it has to happen. They can handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. We always like to have the best in the business around us, and that includes Tuesdays with Neil. You are the best. Thanks so much.
You bet, as always. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so here we are at this time of the year. I'm going to assume that for you in this business, this is as slow as it gets?
That's one way to look at it, yes. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that kind of gets focused on now. This is sort of contract negotiation time, strategy time, and making a huge deal out of absolutely everything. you got to put the content out there. You kind of try during the season to maybe save a few concepts that you can dig a bit more deeply into in the off season. But yeah, it's the days go by a bit slower. Let's put it that way. There's always plenty to do. It's just this is not the time of the year for the excitement portion of it, which, to be fair, in a business that's exciting 10 and a half months out of the year, you can deal with the fact that you have a team of people writing about everyone's training camp schedule being released today, the type of things that you're not thinking twice about come October.
Is there a story that you can think of that you worked on in the off season any year, and boy, it came to fruition because it turned out your instincts were correct? And was there a story that you really thought was going to be interesting to follow, and it turned out to be a bust?
Nearly every story I've written I thought was interesting to follow, but it turned out to be a bust.
That's not true.
Too many to mention on that front, but that's a good question. One that I remember early on was we did kind of a digital magazine that we titled "Violating All Kinds of Copyright Law," The Renegade. I did kind of an in-depth look at this athletic evaluation metric that the Seattle Seahawks had commissioned their research and development team in conjunction with Nike to kind of create and to lay out. They called it Spark. I'm trying to remember exactly what that stood for, but like speed, performance, a bunch of things. While we didn't know the exact application of it, a few other basement-dwelling bloggers like myself were able to kind of reconstruct what it probably entailed. And then we applied that to the Steelers draft class back in 2014. This was important because it was obvious after 1 year Jarvis Jones was not going to be the type of player that you would normally take at 17 overall. He looked more like the mid-level prospect that this spark metric might suggest, just purely based on physical measurements and athletic ability as told by the events that he participated in his pro day and the combine. Jones's profile was really low. Simply put, I think it matched the eye test as well. He's not a freak athlete. He doesn't look like a freak athlete. He doesn't have great measurements, but at least he doesn't really show it on the field either. Why they took him 17 overall was a mystery to me at the time, and still to this day, in my opinion, the most confusing first-round pick the Steelers have made right. in the last three decades, probably.
Right.
Spark, though, very much showed the issues with that, and it seemed to parallel, not all, of course, but many of the more known, the more heralded prospects of the previous couple of years. You know, in other words, these guys have these things, they're having success in the NFL. These guys didn't, and they're not. That correlation, while not 100% true, seemed to be reasonably correct most of the time. What was interesting to me was how strong the parallel was of that metric as we re-engineered it to the Steelers' 2014 class. As you might recall, Ryan Shazier was not a player that many thought the Steelers were going to look at 15 overall that season.
Right.
He was one that I really liked. I thought he was just a phenomenal athlete.
Me
a lot
too.
Of different ways that they could use him. He was, I believe, he was one of the top five rated in that class in this metric. And the Steelers jumped on him in the first round. Second round was Stephon Tuitt, another player that I believe I said, you know, he might not meet top 15 for the Steelers, but there's no way this guy's on the clock, on the board in the second round for the Steelers. Great player, fits what they're doing very well, great athlete. He was their second round pick. Very good spark score as well. Then, of course, there was Dree Archer, the infamous Dree Archer, who, if he did anything, it was test really well in spark.
Yeah.
You know, high level speed, a lot of explosive ability. Not a football player, unfortunately. You know, you don't get them all right. But the big one that I said, I wrote about this guy repeatedly, was the guy playing opposite Sammy Watkins in Clemson, this guy named Martavis Bryant.
Yep.
And I watched Watkins, and my takeaway that year in evaluating the entire draft class was I thought Odell Beckham was a better prospect, and I didn't think it was particularly close, to be honest with you. I didn't see a flaw as far as a college player went. Odell Beckham was about as well-rounded a prospect as I had seen. And to suggest that Sammy Watkins was better just seemed weird to me. I didn't like that at all. In fact, the thing that I wrote about was watching Clemson. I walked out of you know, watching that film, I walked out of the proverbial stadium thinking about the 6'5" guy that runs like a deer that
right.
got four catches and 130 yards and a touchdown. I want to know more about this guy. Bryant had some eligibility issues. He wasn't very well regarded in terms of consistency. He hadn't played a ton, but he was big in spark. So that kind of springboarded the whole project, and we put together a pretty substantial package on the idea that I don't know exactly what measurement the Steelers used, but it was a lot like this, and they obviously didn't use this before. And since then, since 2014, the Steelers have used have taken a player in the first round who rated particularly high in this re-engineered measurement every year prior to that. So to me, in my head, and I'll never get anybody to say this openly, there was an obvious philosophical change from 2013 to 2014, and the Steelers have leaned on the idea of drafting high-end athletes and or physical you know, freaks, for lack of a better word, in the first round. And they've stuck with that pretty consistently, wherever they were in the draft. Most notably since then, we did kind of a postscript on this a couple years later. T.J. Watt fit the spark description very well. But T.J. Watt did not fit the old school Steelers philosophy of wanting a certain amount of experience at the college level, or he's 20 years old. In other words, like a Maurkice Pouncey did not have a high level of experience, but he was very young and he was very big. You know, Maurkice Pouncey is one of the biggest centers you'll ever see in the NFL. Watt had everything but experience.
Right.
Injuries kind of held him back. He didn't play a whole lot, but obviously the bloodlines are there. A freakishly explosive athlete, very well built athlete. He fell to 30 overall or 20 or wherever it was that Watt went. I think it was 30, largely because of the fact that he didn't play. But he fit that athletic profile that the Steelers had focused on since 2014 so well. It was a no-brainer for them. There were other defensive ends, edge rushers, that went before him. Obviously, that doesn't look very good in retrospect. But his athletic profile was very similar to Myles Garrett, who is one of the best of all time and went first overall. So you saw what they were looking at that point, and they've been able to target, by and large, good first-round athletes with the idea of building them into players. Now, that's a different story, but you don't draft in the first round a player that's ready-made out of the box to be in the Hall of Fame, you know, certainly not at 30 overall. You got the development of T.J. Watt when he got on the field and he was able to play, and you might recall he played pretty much every snap his rookie season. They saw him as a developmental guy. He needed to get out there and play. He needed snaps. And they built him up into a pretty good player. Now, if you draft a guy at 30 saying he's going to be in the Hall of Fame, you're lying. You know, there's no way you know that. But they have rested themselves very much on finding and identifying athletes first, football players second in the first round. Then, unfortunately, you get Artie Burns, you get Terrell Edmonds, Devin Bush. Players like that, unfortunately, don't fit the way that you want. And I'm not saying that it's perfect. Obviously, it isn't. Otherwise, you know, one team would win every year, and that general manager would be easily revered as the greatest of all time. Right. Not as easy as that. But to me, the offseason gives you the opportunity to dive into things like that, to tell a story in a different way that you just don't really have time to dig into. And it doesn't really even have the same kind of relevance in the week-to-week grind that the regular season becomes very quickly. And I enjoyed that. That was one of the best experiences I've had in media, really just investigating it, talking to different people, learning about what goes into it, seeing the science behind it all and how that pertains now to the NFL. And really, I think that the lead sentence was, for the Pittsburgh Steelers, they used to get Joey Porter in the third round. Now they draft 17 overall and get Jarvis Jones.
Right.
You know, the athleticism became much more important in just 15 years, and teams caught up with that. They recognized that. Teams like the Steelers and to a degree the Ravens, Browns and Ravens back then, didn't get to reap the bounty of the quote-unquote undersized players that don't have utility at their college positions in the NFL. The Steelers at that point had, you know, the advancement of versatility. You know, they didn't need Joey Porter to be a defensive end. He was a defensive end in college. They taught him to stand up and rush the passer, and he was good at it out of the box. I mean, right away, he was a really good player. He went in the third round because he wasn't a quote-unquote positional fit for most of the NFL. The evolution of the game became that they were all like stand-up outside linebackers when they got drafted now.
Sure.
And that kind of thing, I think you can tell that story a lot better with more time in the offseason without a bunch of other transactional stuff to focus on.
Okay, so the NFL is, you know, Roger Goodell may not do a lot of interviews or press conferences, but he does have to testify at trials. And so in Los Angeles, and they're trying to find out now whether the NFL can distribute its package of out-of-market games, and this is the NFL Sunday Ticket lawsuit. It was filed years ago. It's a class action suit that applies to more than 2.4 million residential subscribers, 48,000 businesses. So if the NFL were to lose, and they would appeal to the Ninth Circuit Court, then it would go to the Supreme Court. So this will take years. If they're found liable, a jury could award $7 billion in damages. Oh, and by the way, because it's an antitrust suit, it's $21 billion, because it would be troubled. Okay. as Roger Goodell said yesterday on the witness stand, he says, well, we have an antitrust exemption. How do you view this rather interesting case, especially in view of how other leagues handle out-of-market games?
I think the antitrust exception that the NFL has might be the most valuable component of any sport anywhere in the world.
Yep.
They usually get away with that, which is to say they're a different classification of business, and they've operated accordingly. On one hand, it doesn't seem to be in you know the spirit of a free enterprise, but in the other, I don't think that we have the game as we know it today without it. Now, I'd honestly ask, as somebody that's been critical of Roger Goodell for you know most of the things that he's done since he's taken over, do we really want that?
Right.
You like to think there's a happy medium in there somewhere. The real issue comes into, I think, their ability to maneuver politically. I think that's the kind of stuff that irritates fans more than anything. I don't think them using an antitrust shield in this case is particularly bothersome to Joe Sweatsock. I don't think the right. average person really cares a whole lot about that, especially in particular in this case. I find it just my useless two cents. I find it disingenuous that ESPN wants to say they could have offered this for $49.99. There's no way I'm going to believe ESPN would have done that. Okay,
that's right.
For the same reasons why the NFL doesn't want them to. They wanted to create a premium product, and the reason they want to do that is because ultimately they want to get people in the stands. You know, if you charge that, literally no, you charge a full access package available on cable to everybody in the country for less money than the ticket prices, they're not going to go. It wouldn't make sense to them from a business perspective, and people are going to argue, well, that just gives them the ability to increase rates. Well, there's a lot that goes into that too. What about the players that want, you know, top dollar for their services, that are giving literally years at the end of their lives for the sake of this entertainment? They should be compensated as well. At what point are you justifying their salaries not increasing because of the TV deal that you get to buy for less money? You know, it seems like a very black and white issue, but as you pointed out, this is a ginormous suit that's going to go on for a very, very long time. I don't know if there is necessarily a right answer. I think it's just something, though, that will pave the way to future handlings, and maybe that's really what the point is, you know, because there probably is a fairer price than what Direct Ticket was. I do think that the introduction of competition as far as broadcast is concerned helps with that, but I also think that's kind of what they have now. I mean, I did YouTube TV this last year. The product was really good. I enjoyed everything that came with it. The price is, you know, on par now with perhaps what it was 12 years ago. Maybe that's a problem there, but it seems to be one that they've adjusted to. Technology should make things more affordable. They should make their product more available to people that embrace more than just the local team for reasons that they're promoting. Fantasy football, gambling, everything like that gives the average fan much more reason to be invested in the league beyond just the team that they're watching. You know, I'm also a product of a generation that we had to drive 20 miles into St. Paul to go to a dingy bar to watch Steelers games. We couldn't watch them on regular TV. You know, at that point, we couldn't afford the satellite dish and I think it was like $500 for that first year for Direct Ticket, and not many places would show just the one game. So I'm used to having to work a bit to get that, but the access of it is really nice to have, clean, available, where I want to watch it, when I want to watch it. That's sort of the way culture is now. You know, it didn't used to be that way, and I think that's more of the mindset that the NFL, for better or worse, was thinking about. And I can see where they came from in deciding that. Though if we look at it just in the lens of, you have the opportunity to make this cheaper for everybody, why didn't you? Well, because we don't have a cheap product, that's why. You know, I think people know going into that argument what side of it they're going to be on. And it's a gray area. It's a dicey area. I am far from a legal expert. But looking how it all plays out, competition ultimately is a better thing. But in some cases, you can't expect a business to continue to provide what it is if it's forced to lower its prices just due to the availability of that technology. Make the product better. You're charging what you're charging for, and if people are paying it, the demand for it still exists, but you got to be reasonable with that, and that's a business decision ultimately, in my opinion.
Well, part of the demand, though, is the fact that we've become very transitory society. So a Minnesota Vikings fan may live in Florida now. A Pittsburgh Steelers fan may live in Arizona, and that's why you put a service like that together. At the same time, it has to be a win-win, I think, for both sides. And this lawsuit would swing the pendulum one way or the other. The NFL hasn't really tried to make it a win-win for both sides to this point, in all likelihood.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think they are obligated to give a bit more than they probably have. Again, this is going to come down to the pricing. At least the latest revelation in the trial is the allegation that ESPN had offered up a $50 version of this. I question the validity of that.
I do too.
ESPN charges at least that for, I think it's $12.99 now for Insider.
Yeah.
That's not, it's not right. 14 NFL games live at your fingertips. There's no way they would have charged that. That doesn't make sense for them either. Again, for the same reason. It's a premium product. You need to be able to charge something to keep the people who own it invested in it. Otherwise, it goes away. That's why prices increase. They're going to get you in on the ground level, but it's going to go up. So in my mind, it's disingenuous to act as if the NFL was interested in a bait-and-switch type of environment, But that doesn't change the fact that you're exactly right. I would even go a step further. Not only are there Vikings fans in Miami that want to watch Vikings games, but there are people that aren't particularly interested in a team. They're more interested in the player. And we know that because that's the way sports have gone. I can tell you from direct experience covering the NBA, it's far more about the player than it is about a team.
Yes.
Unfortunately, the Celtics win another championship, but people, by and large, were far more about, Brown versus Luka, what Tatum is doing, things like that, than they are Celtic Green. Those days aren't gone, but, by and large, people are far more concerned with the moves and the machinations of the players than they are. So NBA League Pass, for example, the rival product that compares to NFL Direct Ticket, is about that. It's about the players. They push matchups. Who's this guy playing tonight? It's less about the team, and that's how they market their product. So the NFL should recognize that to some degree, even if it does kind of stand in the way of the tradition that is the NFL, which is really, team versus team, my tribe versus yours. They're able to offer up their product in a more thorough way than perhaps they did then and are able to in the future.
Sir, always a pleasure, even when it's allegedly the slowest time of the year. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulon, half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Spring has sprung, and it's time to dust off those insurance policies. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855 or visit our website at purdyinsurance.com to see what we can do for you.